If I only have one wish this Christmas, it would be to hear the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A Medicare podcast that barks up the right tree every time. And now, practicing bird calls under the spreading chestnut tree, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting, thrill-packed episode of Medicare for the Lazy Man. I am your Medicare expert, as Drew McMillan said. I am Doug Jones, and I'm here to help you through the Obamacare abyss into the beautiful land of Medicare. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you on board. What we're doing here is we're going to explain a little bit about Medicare, hopefully in some entertainment, but more importantly, we're going to guide you to my book, which inspired this whole thing. The book is Medicare for the Lazy Man, 2022, simplest and easiest guide ever. And it's on sale at a couple of places. One is barnesandnoble.com. The other is amazon.com, where you can find it in hardcover version, softcover edition, Audible, where you can just listen to me read the book to you, and the Kindle version, or ebook, as we fondly call it. All of those four types of editions are available for you to buy on Amazon.com, and they're quite reasonably priced. And by the time you finish maybe an hour to an hour and a half's worth of reading, you're going to know more than anybody you know about Medicare. People will be flocking to your doorstep to ask you about Medicare. It's going to be very exciting being your own Medicare expert in your own circle of friends. So buy the book, take a little time to read it, take you maybe one stiff drink, maybe two to get through it, take a few notes, and you're going to become a Medicare expert just like me. Now, one thing Medicare experts like to do is they like to ask their podcast engineers to play their 30-second radio spots. So Randy and I worked out a radio spot, just like all the other Medicare podcasts have, and we'd like to play it for you now. Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and barnesandnoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. Thank you, Randy. I appreciate that. So we're now down to the point where we're going to start the back and forth portion of our podcast episode. I'm going to ask Randy to join us. Hey, Randy, are you there? Hey, Randy.
I am. Now, you're not going to give me a quiz today, are you?
I was going to give you a quiz because I was given some very interesting content by our old buddy, Steve. And then cool. I thought, you know, cool. Something, the specialty that you engage in is making the insurance guy look like a dope, because that's what you specialize in. And frankly, it's not that hard for you, is it? You're not breaking a sweat making me look like a.
Well, no, you're missing my entire focus there. Most of the time you get it. Except when I delve outside the concept of insurance into, like, I don't know, brain surgery.
Yeah. Rocket science. I'm not very good. When you get outside of insurance, I'm not going to be your guy to answer questions. So I thought I would just share. Steve sent some odds and ends. These are weird thoughts that came to him or things that he stumbled over. And one, I just thought I'd share them with you rather than devise an actual quiz for you. And I might not even go through the whole thing because he was a busy guy on the day that he put all this together, which happened to be on D-Day. So I'm hoping that he was at home in quiet contemplation because he was he sent me all this stuff on June 6th. And I remember that day very well. It was about 4 days ago, I guess now. So Steve goes, I know that Randy will enjoy this one. He read the book One Damn Thing After Another by Bill Barr, the former attorney general. He has led an interesting life. He was talking about growing up in New York, and here's a quote from that time. And so this is now Bill Barr talking. At 5 years old, I was a scrawny, pale child and collapsed one day on the street while walking to kindergarten. When tests showed I was anemic, I was admitted to nearby St. Luke's Hospital for evaluation. Some doctors thought the x-rays showed a growth on my heart, and they wanted to conduct exploratory surgery. Others thought it was just a shadow. I was going into my second week of tests when my Irish-born grandmother arrived from Hartford, as did a priest, also from Ireland, who was close to my mother's family. Quickly poo-pooing any idea of an operation, they instead prescribed at least 8 ounces of Guinness stout a day.
There you go.
He's a kindergartner.
That'll do it.
Randy, he was a kindergartner. Anyway, so 8 ounces of stout a day, and it says at least 8 ounces was the prescription. So he said, I was discharged from the hospital, and until I was 12 years old, I drank a glass of stout every day, much to my brother's envy. The treatment was discontinued when it became apparent that I had become anything but scrawny. So that was what the first item on this list that Steve sent us. He was pretty sure you would enjoy hearing about that.
Steve, I love that. I love that kind of stuff.
Well, here's another thing. I can't stop now. He says when he was in college, he had a fraternity brother whose name was Fagan. A restaurant in town was advertising that they had English beer, Guinness. He went down there and tore them a new one, saying to correct their ad or else don't serve it. Well, they corrected it. So they obviously needed to be educated as to the origin of Guinness.
Oh, by the way, Guinness is brewed in Dublin. It's not got anything to do with England.
Well, as an Anglophile who has no Irish blood that he's aware of, I would have to say I'm happy to have the record corrected. But geez, you know, you guys are awful touchy about the source of your brew.
We are. And the other thing I was going to mention about Guinness is these aren't current signs, but as you might imagine, Guinness used to have a bunch of metal signs, you know, they hammer up on a building or something over the course of the years. I've actually seen some of the historic metal signs where they were, you know, you were talking about feeding Mr. Barr, you know, as a child, a pint of stout every day. They recommended the same thing for pregnant women.
Wow. You know, my doctor would recommend Lucky Strike cigarettes because they were so mild.
This is a true story. I used to work for the fella by the name, well, I won't say, Daryl. Daryl's no longer with us. And his wife, Blanche, who, you know, if you filled Blanche's pockets full of rocks, she probably would weigh in at about 83 pounds.
Okay. So if you're going to test her for being a witch, she wouldn't, she would float.
She would float. Yeah. So her doctor, when she was pregnant with their son, and Blanche was like a little bird, you know, she would just couldn't sit still, hopping around. And her doctor actually said, calm down. You're going to give birth to a child that's just like nervous. And he said, here, start smoking. It'll calm you down.
Oh, boy. Well, I remember that smoking was allowed, if not encouraged, in hospitals, at least up until the time my children were born, and which was in the 70s. And I remember my wife had a complicated pregnancy, and so she was on oxygen, and I went to visit her. I was in her room, and the nurse had a big no smoking sign because of the oxygen. And I said, oh, come on, you know, is it really true that you can't smoke around oxygen? She looked around. She said, well, nobody's watching, so what the heck? Go ahead and light up. And the last I remember of smoking in hospital, our town built a brand new hospital on a big parcel of acreage. And there was a big patio, and my mother was in the hospital one of her millions of times. And she bribed a nurse to take her out and roll her onto the patio and allow her to smoke after smoking was not allowed in the hospital, but was still allowed outside. So she, in future hospital stays, she couldn't do that. Even it was on the property was policed by the smoking Nazis.
You know, I always did like your mom, but I like her even better now.
Yeah, she was bedridden her last, I'd say, 8 years of her life. And she had also emphysema from enjoying smoking too much. So she would have the oxygen in one hand and the cigarette in the other hand. And it was never no smoking in her area of the house just because of the oxygen. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally understand.
And when she died, it was nice and quiet. I mean, she basically just fell asleep. So it wasn't a lengthy, horrible suffering like a lot of smokers had to deal with. So that was, you know, could have been worse. Nowadays, I find myself at the age when I look at obituaries and I say, how did this person die? I'm hoping it was quiet and painless, not a long, lengthy suffering period.
Exactly. Well, I'm not going to form it into a quiz today. I did have some research I did before the podcast for Stump the Insurance Expert.
Okay.
Instead, I'm just going to use it as a historical lesson.
Okay. Well, why don't you do that now, and then we'll get down to our Medicare content.
Okay. So here you go. As you all know on the podcast, and Mr. Jones, there's been several people over the course of the years try for whatever reason to become famous by riding a barrel over Niagara Falls.
Hmm.
Now, I have no idea who ever dreamt up this idea, but it's been going on for quite a number of years. And I read this before I got on the air today, and I just thought it was interesting. You know, it's kind of one of those stories of, oh my God, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You know, tomorrow is never promised and nobody will know what it brings. Here you go. The second guy by the name of Mr. Bobby Leach in 1911 was the only second guy to make it over Niagara Falls and live. Okay. That's a good thing.
Okay.
However, here's the gotcha. Here's the other shoe to fall. Mr. Leach died at the age of 69.
Uh-huh.
From complications after slipping on an orange peel and breaking his leg.
Oh, my God. Oh, geez. He cheated death by doing something stupid, and then he wound up dying because of something routine.
Yeah, exactly.
That's incredible.
Now, how crazy is that?
But in your Niagara Falls research, did you run across a woman, the story of a woman who went over in a barrel and survived?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I remembered that.
Yeah, I have many. There's been several. Well, I don't know. I'll give you the more details in maybe next podcast. But
okay,
there's been a number of people that have made it over. I mean, it's not like a whole busload of people have lived.
Yeah, right,
but,
right.
But there
maybe
have
a short bus. A
yeah,
short
it's
bus
like
call,
the sh-
which they probably
well, there's
rode to
there's
school.
A reason. There's a reason for that.
Absolutely. I can see the commonality there. But
yeah, so there's been like 30 or 40 people live. But
a few questions occur to me. How do you get out of the barrel?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Doug, because I'll tell you one little bit side story here. You have to depend on a recovery crew. And there was one fellow that built himself like the Sherman tank of Niagara barrels.
Okay.
They said that this thing, I'll give you the more details later, but they said this thing weighed over a ton.
Holy crap.
So this is one hell of a barrel, I'll tell you. And he rode this puppy over. I mean, it had bolts that they cranked shut and all kinds of stuff. And so he sent him over the falls. He got stuck in an undertow under some rocks.
Uh-huh.
His recovery crew 18 hours to get him out. He was dead when they finally got him out because he suffocated.
Gee, I was hoping for a happier ending to that story, but leave it to Randy to throw a curveball at us right at the end of the story.
Everybody, it's just one of those stories. Go, why didn't he take more oxygen with him?
If you're in the early part of the century and you got a barrel that weighs a ton, I'm thinking A, it's tough to get bottled oxygen, so maybe there wasn't a lot, but B, it was probably big enough, like he could have a living room in there, he could have a couch.
Yeah. He could have a fridge and some Guinness. I mean, you never know.
So, but once it hit the bottom, and it didn't shatter in the rocks, but it was sucked under by the undertow, the turbulence of the water, and it was under there for 18 hours until they found it, snagged it, and pulled it up.
No, well, they knew where it was. It took his recovery crew 18 hours to get it out of there.
What were they doing? Playing poker? And
well, my guess, and I have no details around, my guess is that, you know, this place where people get sucked under and they can't get out is underneath where the falls comes down. And I don't think they could get him out of there because it was being driven down by the falls.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. Oh, boy. Well, let's all contemplate that happy.
There you go.
Happy accident. While we study some Medicare.
Stay away from orange. There's the moral to this story is stay away from oranges and 1-ton barrels.
Right. And waterfalls. Might as well stay away from waterfalls, too, I'm thinking. All righty. Well, let's now that we've killed virtually half of the episode, let me shorten my my goal of imparting Medicare knowledge. I got a couple of things here. One is from the Washington Post. Medicare Advantage insurance firms are accused of data mining patient records and submitting false bills. Now, Randy and I have a rich history.
I'm shocked.
Yes, it's hard to believe after all we've read, they haven't cleaned up their acts yet. But what we've got is a whole genre of Medicare products that are marketed by insurance companies who are being constantly accused of evil doing, I would have to say, evil doing on the part of the federal government that pays their bills, and evil doing on the part of the clients, the patients, who are often denied treatment or denied permission to seek treatment from a specialist because the plan thinks they can save money by not allowing them to get better treatment. So anyway, here's a person named Kathy Ormsby. Her work auditing medical case files uncovered an alleged scheme to defraud the federal government. The California health system that employed her was scouring health histories of thousands of elderly Medicare patients and then pressuring doctors to add false diagnoses that it found to their current medical records. The point of larding the medical records with outdated and irrelevant diagnoses, such as cancer and stroke, often without the knowledge of the patients themselves, was not providing better care, according to a lawsuit from the Justice Department. It was to make patients appear sicker than they were. And Randy, what happens when the patients appear to be sick? The federal government gives the insurance company more money.
Yeah, exactly. All you got to do is say, well, you know, Randy, I heard Randy I think he's seriously depressed, even though he's not. But so then the government comes back around and says, oh, well, if that's the case, then we're going to hand out more money just in case he's depressed.
That's right. To your insurance company. And they're standing there with their hand out going, oh, we'll take good care of Randy, as they put the money in their pocket and then head off to the Guinness brewery or whatever they
okay. Keep in mind, I'm an old guy from the West. I was born in Western Nebraska on a ranch. So then the moral to this story, folks, is not only does the government give them more money that they don't give out in claims because their process is to deny the claims the first time, maybe the second time. That's just the normal process. And then the people that have the stick-to-itiveness to go after it, guess what? Well, you know this, Doug. The vast majority of their claims get approved now.
That's right. But most of the people have given up by that time. They've said, well, darn it, I guess I either have to pay for it myself or go without treatment because my insurance company denied my claim. And then you find out that if you're persistent, and a small percentage of people are, the insurance company will understand and they will give you the go-ahead to get that additional treatment that you probably need. So it's just crazy that people keep purchasing these products that treat them like, what's a good synonym here? They treat them like serfs. I don't know, like third-class citizens maybe. So another thing that people are told to worry about is Medicare going broke. We've got like 4 years until the Medicare trust fund collapses. And I learned a while back that in reality, what they say when they're warning us about that is that they're not going to completely stop paying Medicare claims. But when the Medicare trust fund runs out, it has new money coming into it all the time. So what they're going to do is reduce the compensation that doctors and hospitals are going to get for treating people. And so that's the scary thing that they always warn us about. The Medicare Trust Fund is going to hit a brick wall in 2024 or 2025, something like that. Well, this article that I just found says the Medicare Trust Fund gains a little breathing room. The annual trustees report estimates that Medicare Trust Fund will be able to pay all the costs for hospital services of older and disabled beneficiaries until 2028, 2 years later than the trustees said last year. Their analysis, which also noted an improved outlook for the Social Security Trust Fund, credited the strong economy or the strong economic recovery following the COVID crisis. Now, I'm not sure there has been such a strong economic recovery.
Strong economic recovery?
That's right. Not every article that I that floats to the surface is really as believable as one would think.
Where are they looking? I don't see anything.
Maybe they're looking at Ukraine because all of their young people are gainfully employed there, fighting off the Russians, I guess. So anyway, here are a few sources for this rosy outlook for the Medicare Trust Fund. The AP, always a good solid source of information. The AP says go broke dates pushed back for Social Security and Medicare. A stronger than expected economic recovery from the pandemic. What country do they live in? Has pushed back the go broke dates for Social Security and Medicare, but officials warn that the current economic turbulence is putting additional pressures on the bedrock retirement programs. The annual Social Security and Medicare trustees report released on Thursday, and this is a fairly recent article, so I'm thinking last Thursday, which would have been, let's see, today is the 9th of June, so subtract a week. Yeah, that would be around the 2nd of June. The annual Social Security and Medicare trustees report released early in June, let's say, says Social Security Trust Fund will be unable to pay full benefits beginning in 2035 instead of last year's estimate of 2034. So they've actually gained a year. The year before that it estimated an exhaustion date of 2035. The year before it, obviously their original prediction was off by 1 year is what they're saying. Now on the Hill has said Medicare funding outlook improves slightly. The financial outlook for Medicare has improved in the past year, and the program's funding will pay all costs for hospital services of older and disabled beneficiaries, and it won't run out until 2028, 2 years later than last year's estimated date. Once the program's reserves are depleted, it would only be able to cover 90% of the expected costs, according to the annual report from Social Security and Medicare trustees released on Thursday, June 2nd. So that's what I was saying earlier, that it's not that they would completely stop paying their obligations, but they would have to scale back and pay something less than 100% of the obligations. The New York Times, that bastion of truth, liberty, justice in the American way, their headline is Social Security and Medicare funds improved, but long-term is dire. Women and children worst hurt. I just threw that in because that's what they like to do. The forecast for Medicare's hospital trust fund improved. It is now expected to encounter a shortfall in 2028, 2 years later than the forecast in last year's report. That change is due mostly to the improved economic forecast since the program is funded through payroll taxes. The actuaries do not expect the pandemic to have had any substantial long-term impact on the trajectory of Medicare spending, according to the report. Spending on many elective services declined during the pandemic, while spending on vaccines and treatment for COVID-19 increased. The actuaries said that they expected medical spending to return to its normal trend in a few years, but they noted that there was a large degree of uncertainty about the future of spending related to the virus. And finally, The Hill again. This time, their headline is Progressives Slam HHS Decision to Keep Higher 2022 Medicare Premium. So this headline is saying that liberals are upset with the Health and Human Services decision not to reduce the extraordinarily high Medicare Advantage, or excuse me, Medicare Part B premium that was imposed on Medicare participants starting at the beginning of 2022. Progressives, and that means liberals or lefties, they are criticizing the Biden administration's recent announcement that the 2022 Medicare premium will not be cut despite the lower than expected costs for a new Alzheimer's medicine. The cost of a premium jumped by $21.60 to a minimum of $170.10 and a maximum of $578.30 in 2022. That's the largest increase in the program's history. Premiums are based in part on income and tax filing status. Yeah, the premium pretty much for everybody that's not on welfare for Part B of Medicare, that's the outpatient coverage. That's the encounter you're most likely to have if you're covered by welfare and you wind up getting medical treatment. It's most likely going to be Part B, outpatient. And that premium for most people is $170.10 a month during this year. However, if you are successful beyond a certain measurable amount and your income tax return from 2 years ago shows a higher than average income, you get to pay an IRMA penalty. IRMAA, income-related monthly adjustment amount, and the maximum IRMA penalty would raise your premium level to $578 a month during the year 2022 if you were unlucky enough to be that successful. So that's our Medicare prognostication and accounting report for today, Randy.
I was just sitting here thinking when you mentioned, you know, that if you hit the limit, you know, like you hit the limit on IRMA, you're going to be paying something like 500 and whatever amount of money.
$538, I think it was.
$538 a month. That's still a bargain compared to Obamacare for us self-employed people.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And that's what I tell people. IRMA is not to be feared. It's just to be get angry at. It's not that you're going to go broke or you're not going to be able to afford to go out to eat once in a while. It's just that it's a constant irritation that your government really, if you're successful, they want to stick their hands deeper in your pocket and help themselves to even more of your money.
Oh, absolutely. You gotta love it. You gotta love it. Well, you know, we are out of gas, Doug.
I figured that. So let's say
goodbye. Have you ever run out of gas driving someplace?
Oh boy, I told you the story many episodes ago, so it's time to tell it again. But I got the Corvette out one beautiful late spring day, maybe early summer day on a Sunday, and I said to Mary, you know, that Corvette's been sitting in storage for so long, it's going to require a lot of tender loving care to bring it back into complete, full operational, to its old glory. And so I said, why don't we take it out and just drive it out in the country. There's a little town out there called Elburn, Illinois. And yeah, it's about 10 miles from us. So we hopped in the Corvette on this warm, sunny day, and she didn't want to go. And I said, look, you're going to enjoy it. We love this car. It's time for me to whip it back into shape. It's been stored too long in our barn behind the house. So we drove out to Elburn, and I swear on a stack of Bibles that the gas gauge sat on like 3/4 of a tank. And so we were driving down this country road surrounded by cornfields, and the car quit, and I coasted off the road, got out, and with a Corvette, you can open this is a 1965 Corvette, so you can open the gas tank and look down inside, and all I saw was rusty metal down there. And I said, uh-oh. So this was a Sunday afternoon, and along came a police car pulling over, and the police lady, who I don't think she had been on the job very long, but this was, you know, Elburn, Illinois, and there wasn't a whole lot of policing to do. So she said, would you like a ride back to a gas station? And I said, I would. And she said, all right, well, give me your driver's license so I can run it to make sure you're not going to try to kill me. And so that was, I said, I'm a businessman, for Christ's sake. I'm driving a Corvette, an old Corvette. Do I really look like the kind of person that's going to jump you in the middle of a Sunday afternoon and steal your car? Well, I'm going to put you back there with the cage, but I want to make sure you're not going to go berserk on me. So she, she ran my license and found out I didn't have a record. And so we got in the car, went back to the one of the two gas stations in town, which was a no-name brand. I didn't want to fill the car up with a, you know, an inferior brand of gasoline. So I bought a can of gas, put like a half a gallon in it. She took me back to the Corvette. I poured the gas in there, and then I wanted to drive through town, cross the tracks, drive through town to the BP, which had 93 octane gasoline. And so I turned around and she went away, and I drove up to that the first gas station right next to the tracks, and I tried to sell the can back to them, and they wouldn't, they're not having that. So I said, all right, well, that's disappointing. I didn't want this crappy can with the crappy gas in it. So I then got in the car and I said, well, we're going to drive through town to the BP station. Right then the railroad gates went down, and I got to watch maybe the longest, slowest freight train in the history of the world go by. Now, when the end of that train, which didn't have a caboose, because, you know, we're talking the 1990s here, the end of that train went by the crossing, I saw that there was another train coming the opposite direction. And so we sat there and with the car idling, waiting for the next longest, slowest freight train in the history of the world to go by the opposite direction. And just before the end of that train arrived and the gates went up, the car quit. And because I was pointing uphill and the fuel pump just could not get a grip on any remaining fuel in the tank. So I did what any husband who was preparing for, you know, a threat of divorce would do. And that is to roll backwards down the hill to the crappy gas station. And just, I just filled it up. I said, I'll use
Give me some of that crappy gas.
Yep. Give me as much as you got, because I'm tired of trying to better the quality of the fuel I'm using. So that would, I still hear about that day. I don't know what year it was exactly.
I don't doubt it in the least. You know where, you know why I knew from the very beginning when you started telling your story, where it was going? When you
I
said,
do not know.
Let's go on a ride. And your wife says, I don't want to go. And you go, oh, come on. It's going to be wonderful.
Now, fairness suggests that I ask you if you've had a gas supply problem. Have you run out of gas?
I refuse to answer on the grounds it might tend to incriminate me.
All right. What's Margaret's number? Let me call her.
Well, Margaret, I kid you not. Margaret has never run out of gas in her life because she won't let it get down below 3/4, and she's heading to the gas station.
Well, at least her fuel pump is always cool and bathed in cooling fluid. So that part's good. It might be a little OCD, but I'm not going to have that conversation.
Well, nah, we won't go there.
Jeez. Oh my God. I just looked at the clock. Oh boy. Oh boy. This is going to set a record.
Yeah. Well, you know something? I think we are out of fuel now, so we need to coaster into is it the crappy gas station or BP?
That's where I wound up, the crappy gas station.
Let's coast on into crappy gas here. But anyway, long story short is you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes. But I need to say thanks before we end out and, you know, remind you to go get your book, remind you to go get all that stuff that you will never, ever regret buying, because it's going to set you on the right path for Medicare supplement plans, as opposed to the opposite possibilities, which would be a seriously bad choice. But anyway, long story short is thanks for joining us. We enjoy every minute of it. We enjoy every one of you. And we look forward to the podcast again next time. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy, scouting out from I think it's about the 14,000 foot altitude above Cave Creek, Arizona. He's sitting here. I can see him. He's got his little furry mucklucks on. You know, it must be very cool up there.
I'm waving. Can you see me wave?
It's Doug up there. So anyway, thanks for joining us. And you have just spent all that time, but it wasn't a waste. You listened to probably the most knowledgeable insurance expert in the United States, Doug Jones.
Bye-bye.